Flashback? Flashback?
Rufio! Rufio!
Flashbacks.
All day I've had this strong desire, raging from within. You can say that my heart's on fire.
Somewhere between.
Keep your hands on where I can see them, man.
Hey, it's 21st century, man. I don't know what I can do.
Flashbacks.
You are a sick individual and you need to be put out of your misery.
Flashback? Flashback?
Well, hello everybody out there in podcast land and welcome to another episode of the Front Row Network's Flashback, where we get all nostalgia-like about our favorite movies from our past. And tonight, we are talking about a buddy cop from the 90s. We are talking about Bad Boys. I am Ryan Lutens and with me is my co-host,
Jay Hoffman.
So yeah, we are really going to dive into talking about Bad Boys. The reason why we're going to talk about Bad Boys is because it celebrated its 25th anniversary this year. And Bad Boys for Life is currently the top grossing movie of 2020. Thanks, coronavirus, question mark. Either way, we're going to take a deep dive in talking about Bad Boys and then kind of looking at the sequels as we go. But before we get to that, let's just go through a quick synopsis of what Bad Boys is. Jay, you want to take this over?
All right. So if you're listening to this, you probably already know, but we want to make sure everybody has a quick rundown. So Bad Boys is a 1995 buddy cop action film that tells the story of two friends from high school that grew up to be narcotics officers. Family man Marcus Burnett and playboy Mike Lowry made their careers on $100 million heroin bust. But when master thieves steal the heroin back, Mike and Marcus are put on the case with a 72-hour time frame to solve the case before the FBI takes over. In the course of their case, one of Mike's informants discovers a rogue thief who took some of the heroin for his own party. Unfortunately, the leader of all the thieves breaks into the party and kills Mike's informant on the inside, but not without leaving a witness, Julie. Julie, knowing our informant's trusting relationship to Mike, calls on Mike looking for protection. Unfortunately, Marcus is the one that takes the call and has to play the role of Mike in order to maintain her trust. Now our starring duo have flip-flopped their lives in order to maintain their witness and solve the crime before it's too late.
Well said, well said. All right, so Bad Boys was released on April 7th, 1995, so it celebrated its 25th anniversary. It's got two sequels. The film was made for $19 million, but on the flip side, box office, it made $141.4 million. To say the movie, I mean, it was a very mixed bag of reception. This movie definitely developed a cult following in the end, but it's only got a 43% Rotten Tomatoes score. Average rating is about 5.06 out of 10. Some of the reviews have said they love the enjoyable chemistry between Smith and Lawrence, but unfortunately Michael Bay often drowns it out with set pieces and explosions instead of actual story, which we will dive deep into that. So Michael Bay, you know, big name, Transformers, Pearl Harbor, all those other crappy movies. This was Michael Bay's first movie in 1995. Before that, he was just doing music videos. So this is actually his first big step into the realm of action. It's produced by Don Simpson and Jerry Bruckheimer, two big names. Bruckheimer and Simpson would go on to do the Pirates of the Caribbean. But Bruckheimer is very closely related in the work world to Michael Bay. They are constantly collaborating on projects. This movie was written first by George Gallo. He had the story idea. George Gallo, he is known for Midnight Run, if anybody's seen Midnight Run. But then the story was created into a screenplay by Michael Berry, Jim Mulholland, and Doug Richardson. Okay, the first two guys, this was really the only movie they did, and it's actually the last movie they did. They did some TV work in there, but really I think where a lot of the strong action aspects come from is Doug Richardson. He has done Bad Boys 2, Hostage, and I believe, yep, he did the rewrite for Live Free or Die Hard. So this guy knows what he's talking about when it comes to action. So movie stars Martin Lawrence and Will Smith. we know who these people, who these guys are now, but back in the day, this was their first starring role in a film. They've been in other films, but this is their first starring role. These two guys are coming off of the small screen and now making their way onto the big screen. Martin Lawrence obviously was known for the TV show Martin, and Will Smith was coming from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. These guys explode because of this movie. Let's be honest. Will Smith goes on to do Independence Day and just takes off. Men in Black, you name it, he's done it. And then Martin Lawrence does Nothing But Trouble, and then he goes on to do Black Knight, all those other things that he goes on. Blue Streak. I mean, they all developed after this movie, which is awesome. They've got a well-rounded supporting cast. Tia Leone from TV's Madam Secretary. I'm going to mess it up. Takiki Cario, the French villain, but he's in The Patriot. He was the bad guy in Kiss the Dragon. Teresa Randall plays Martin Lawrence's wife. She was the wife of Michael Jordan in Space Jam. And then, of course, you've got the best of the best when it comes to supporting people. I couldn't think of anybody else to be the chief of police, but Joe Palantino from The Matrix. Great roundabout cast. Awesome cast. Let's dive in. What do you remember about the first time you saw Bad Boys?
Well, we're the same age. I was nine. We were nine when it came out. But my parents were pretty liberal with what I watched. So I think as soon as it came out on, I don't know, what did it, I guess VHS. We definitely rented it and watched it. Probably not the most appropriate thing for the age we are. Honestly, I remember even then not feeling very similar to how I felt upon a rewatch recently. And that was not a big fan. And I got to say, for 10-year-old me, you know, going into what you expect to be a big action movie, and it's action comedy, and it's Michael Bay. I'm not a big fan of how Michael Bay shoots action. And I'm realizing that was true even when I was a kid.
Before you had Transformers.
Yeah. Up to now. I won't totally bash on him. We'll get into that. But I remember, and I'll tell you the thing that really stood out upon the rewatch too. It's a Jerry Bruckheimer thing. The screen, anything he produces, it's got like a green yellow tint.
Yep.
And I hate that. I hate it so much. Go watch Days of Thunder. Looks the exact same way. Armageddon looks the same way. Every movie he touches, I don't know. He's really, I don't know if it's him, but it seems like it's him. And that's like the thing that stands out to me is just being so annoyed by the color of everything.
But it's not that bad in this movie. And that's the best part. But I think what you're saying with the whole tint thing, I think he gets that from Michael Bay because they work closely down the road. You know, they're constantly working together. And so when they're not working together, it's like, I'm going to take this idea from Michael Bay. Anything else you want to add to that?
I also, for some reason, the scene where Tia Leone's dog has the runs, I remember being so disgusted by that as a kid. I don't even know why. That bothered me so much. And then on rewatch, I'm like, that was 10 seconds of the movie, but that was something I associated very strongly with the movie. So memory is a fickle beast. And so I don't really have any positive memories, but I don't really remember a lot of it.
Well, I mean, maybe that positive memory could just be, you know, summed up in a big old pile of crap that the dog laid. Wasn't it? Pookie? I can't remember. Anyway, so for me, I remember seeing it on TV first. TNT. TNT always showed. I don't know what it was. It wasn't TBS. It wasn't USA. It was always TNT. I don't know, because TNT always did like the big action weekends. Mm-hmm. But TNT was it for me. And then I remember watching it. And of course, everything was edited out. And then I would go and rent the VHS and I watched it and I'm like, okay, this is pretty funny. And like the one thing that stood out for me, and it still stands out to me, and we'll talk about it later, is just the opening of the film. And we'll dive into that later. But the opening of the film really nails the tone of the movie. And then when you go back and you look at it and you realize all the stuff that happened in production, you're like, okay, this movie really that opening is fantastic. We'll get into it. But I mean, for me as a 9-year-old, the action was good. The comedy was funny. You know, there were some things that were over my head, but you had a villain that was really, really diabolical. And it just worked for me. But I can just remember watching it on TV and then watching it on VHS and be like, okay, I like it. And the more I watch it, the more I like it. I am definitely in that cult following. I will argue that this is a good action movie, just because of kind of like the struggling that it had in the backstory. So, let's talk about favorite scenes. You know, we all have our favorite scenes. I'm going to go first. Cause I kind of alluded to it, previously, but the opening. Okay. So I don't know if we're talking about the movie. This movie had a very crappy script. It was awful. Even Michael Bay said it was awful. If Michael Bay is telling you that a script is bad, it's bad. It sucks. I can't even wrap my head around that as I'm saying it, but no, it was a bad script. So he told Will Smith and Martin Lawrence to take the ball and run with it. And a lot of those, you know, that chemistry that you see, that's just them playing off one another. And you really get that in the beginning. You know, the movie could have just dived right in with the theft of the heroin, but no, it kind of took a step back and introduced the characters first in a very non-subtle way. They're just having a conversation, and Marcus is eating fast food in his car and they're having a conversation, and it's so believable. And then fries spill and it's just bad news. And it really builds their characters too, because there's car thieves that are falling. Mike's driving this very expensive car, $105,000, and car thieves are following him. So to, you know, kind of get their eye off so they don't see the guys come up with the guns, they send out a woman. And this kind of establishes Mike as a womanizer, because he sees the woman as immediately grilling Marcus about the food in the car issue to seeing a lady. And then you see that, oh, hey, they're cops. And it's just some of the dialogue. Like, I can always remember, I can always do it too, but Martin Lawrence is talking about getting down in there for fries. And he goes, you can't get in between the seat and the console, because then your hand comes up and you got this. Well, I can't say the S word, but this. And he holds up his hand. And it's just the funniest thing. It's so funny. But then when they talk to the car thieves, it's interesting to see how they can switch it, how they're still themselves, but they can still be police officers. You know, Martin Lawrence references Passenger 57, does that move. Will Smith, you know, talking about how he's, you know, he's trying to get him, hey, you're pulling off, you're ripping off some cops. And he goes, oh yeah, I'm a joker. Well, when he puts him on the ground, he goes, well, let's hear one of those jokes now. I just think that movie, that scene set the tone. So that's one of my favorite scenes. I've got more we can talk about, but Jay, what's one of your favorites? I know you probably don't have many.
I don't know that I have a favorite scene. What I will say that I do like about this movie is it felt like in a lot of ways that it flipped kind of the traditional buddy cop movie. I think one thing that they've relied on in a lot of movies is using people of different races to try and create the difference. You know, you think Lethal Weapon, Rush Hour, 48 Hours, you know, that plays a huge role into it. Or if it's not that, it's a cop and a criminal, right? And to create that difference. And this was neither of those. So I do think, even though the script wasn't real strong, I do think they subverted some of the typical expectations of the buddy cop by really what they did. One's a single playboy, one's a guy living the married life. So really something probably far more likely to happen between partners versus kind of their traditional things that have been set up in the genre. So like I said, I don't know that I have a particular scene, and it's a little problematic because I watched Bad Boys 2 right after this, and now they're just kind of bleeding together for me.
They're two completely different movies too.
Yeah, they are. And that's all the action scenes are from. I know they're from the second one because I did think some of the action in that one was good. But I think that was kind of refreshing to subvert the genre in that way and not rely on the old tropes of either having two people of different races and completely different backgrounds, or a criminal and a cop. They just said these are two guys who would be cops who have just slightly difference, you know, slight differences, but enough to create conflict between the two of them.
Yeah. You know, you talked about action scenes. That's probably another one of the scenes that I can remember is, you know, you look at Will Smith, and you know, he's an action star. He was born to be an action star, and he shows that after Bad Boys, but I mean, he really comes into his own. But there's a scene where they're going to check out a lead, and they go to Club Hell, and you know, they're separated. You know, Martin Lawrence needs to go to the bathroom, so Marks goes to the bathroom, and of course, Will Smith, the playboy, you know, goes just to the bar and is just flirting with women. Well, the bad guys see them from the top, and so they send him after Martin Lawrence in the bathroom. And I think that whole fight scene is fantastic, because you don't necessarily see Martin Lawrence as an action guy, and he really dominates that fight scene. It's pretty cool to see, because Will Smith had nothing to do with it. Any thoughts about that?
I think the issue I have now, watching that scene, I don't think you're wrong, but I think when you have Eddie Murphy and Beverly Hills Cop and Chris Tucker and Rush Hour, two comedians making that switch to the action role, I thought they were a lot stronger at the action pieces than Martin Lawrence was.
Yeah, but on the flip side, I mean, they've got that, those dueling roles. You've got Martin Lawrence's character, who's the family man, and then Will Smith, who is the, you know, playboy, you know, inherited a lot of money, womanizer, you know, and to see, it's like they gave him an out, or gave him a reason to show that he is one tough cop. And then it's that scene, because we have Will Smith scene later on. We'll talk about that here in a second. So
I guess the setup is clever.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's what they're going for, because we don't have a strong script. We really don't.
It's so problematic, because you're like, you have, and now especially, because we know how big those guys, I mean, Will Smith in the 90s, last half of the 90s was the biggest movie star on the planet.
Right.
Martin Lawrence was one of the, you know, top handful of comedians of the 90s. And to see these guys like have to struggle through this when it should have been gold with the talent that they have, it's just... That's what it is for me. I'm like, God, you know what these guys are capable of. In this script, they're trying to super glue back together with everything they can. It's rough.
Right. So I mentioned that Will Smith has his action scene. Let's talk about the fight, the run through the street, the chase. You know, this movie doesn't rely really heavily on gunplay. Bad Boys 2. Lots of gunplay. Lots. I don't even think there's a single, you know, car chase without a gun being fired, or, you know, a foot chase without a gun being fired. But the bad guys find out where they're hiding Julie, and they kidnap her. And it just results into a giant foot race, a chase on foot. And I thought that's probably the best sequence that Michael Bay has done, because it's very straightforward. He does do his slow motion. We'll get to that later. But I think it's probably the most straightforward action scene that Michael Bay has done, because it doesn't require a whole lot of set pieces or explosion. It's just a straight chase scene. And then of course, well, any thoughts on that? I mean, one trivia thing. When I was doing my research on this movie, they wanted Will Smith to do that scene shirtless, and he said no, but I'll do it with the shirt, with my shirt buttoned down. What's the difference? You know, anyway, thoughts?
I don't know. I wonder if, because he was trying to blow up from TV star, you know, rapper guy into movie star.
Yeah.
Maybe he just didn't want it to be I think a lot of guys, Brad Pitt, Tom Cruise, I think those guys dealt with a lot of that stuff too, where it's like, hey, you guys want to like sell me as this super handsome, super sexy guy, but I'm talented and I don't want that to overshine. So maybe that would be, that's my best guess, is he wanted, you know, although this is a weird role for him to stand his ground on that, but that would be my best guess. And I agree that chase scene, the end scene was the finale, as you hope every action movie finale was pretty good.
Yeah. I was going to talk about that next.
I do think, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but I was actually really impressed with the car chase scenes in the second movie.
They're really well put together.
Yeah. It just surprised me because I just didn't expect it.
But again, that's Michael Bay.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about that. But I mean, to me, you're talking about the final scene. You know, they catch up with Julie. They catch up with the bad guys. You know, our guys win. But to me, it's just the finale fell flat. Like that's we'll talk about that with the script. But I mean, it just felt you had your big shootout and then you have another car chase and it just sort of ends. And I'm just like, OK.
Yeah. And the ending. Yeah, the very, very ending, especially where the guy reaches for the gun and then they shoot him. And
that is definitely, I can't say it again, that is Michael Bay, but we'll.
I think all around when you look at this movie, when you see like TV shows and they show like within a TV show, a kid's watching some action movie that's supposed to be all cliches. That's what this movie feels like to me.
Yeah.
Like as far as anything that this has done for the genre, it feels like it's created the tropes used to show what trope filled action movies look like. Like right. it hits every single box of those action tropes.
And it really does.
I think at this point where we are with action movies, it makes it hard to go back for me. Several action movies have been hard to go back. And I've actually found it the most difficult with action movies in the '90s, not so much the '80s, because there was kind of a gratuitousness to the violence that kind of makes it stand apart. And it seemed like that gratuitousness softened, but now we're in the world of Mad Max Fury Road and John Wick. And even when it comes to like the cheesier action stuff with the Fast and the Furious, it's so over the top, you can't be anything but jaw drop. So this stuff, it feels flat, mainly due, I think, to time.
Yeah, for me. I can see that, you know, and it's definitely one of those things where, like you said, with the 80s, the violence was very gratuitous. So it's almost like the 90s was almost a break, because I can't really think of a movie in the 90s that was just like, oh, I can't believe they did that in an action flick, or, you know, that stunt was so over the top. But then in, you know, the 2010s, it's just gratuitous action. Like, it's just, what are we going to do next? Like the Fast and Furious, John Wick, Fury Road. I mean, it's just crazy. Okay. I'm done talking about scenes. I'm a cult fan, so I could talk about this movie, but I'm not going to. Let's talk about likes and dislikes. So when we talk about likes and dislikes, it's things that we liked about the production, you know, and things we disliked about the production. I think you can kind of guess what we're going to talk about when it comes to dislike. But let's just talk about our likes. Jay, you start. For me,
I gotta have a coherent thought.
For me, when it comes to the like, I think the casting is very spot on. This movie has some solid players in it, solid players that will be around for quite a bit longer. Every name that I mentioned is still around. Will Smith and Martin Lawrence, they are able to take a script and just run with it. And they're able to improvise and work off of each other. And the chemistry is there. I feel that if you would have someone else, it would fall flat. You know, the villain, oh God, I'm going to ruin his name, Kiki Cario, the French, this guy is amazing. I always, every movie I see him in, it's always a pleasure, but he is just the best part of the movie, in my opinion. Your movie is only as good as your villain, or at least that's what a lot of people say, because you want that person to hate, and this guy was it. You know, when he guns down Mike's informant, it's very hard to watch because he's just so methodical. Like, he closes his eyes, but he still pulls the trigger. Like, it's just so fascinating to watch. I mean, he really brings evil to the screen. Last but not least, you got to talk about Joe Palladino, as their captain. He is beyond a doubt the best comic relief in the film. When he's sitting there shooting baskets and he's missing, it is just so funny to watch. He's like, oh, he makes every excuse in the book. Will Smith take one shot, sinks it. And he goes, what do you like, Mike? It's just so funny. Tia Leone, I'm not the biggest Tia Leone fan, but she was all right. She had her moments, I guess. What do you think about the casting?
I think you're right. I think there would have been maybe a handful of people at that time in Hollywood who could have improved the script the way these guys did, you know, kind of on the fly, just riffing off each other. So I do think this movie was better because those two were in it. I just wish they'd have been given material that they really could have. I mean, when Will Smith is freaking on, there's just nobody more charismatic. Very, very few people as charismatic on the screen. And I don't know. I think you're right. I think they made this for sure. I agree with your assessment of Tia Leone. I actually think she had a show she was on in the 90s that it was pretty good. I think I remember the name of it that I used to watch. And I've seen her in a few other things. I thought she was impressive, but her character is just terrible. I don't know if that's a credit to her acting or just the writing. Like, she is awful and you don't want to hear from her or anything like that. And then with, I want to make sure I say her, Joe Pantaleone. That's Pantaleone. However you say it. What's fun with that guy is when I think of him, I literally think of two movies. I think of Matrix and Baby's Day Out.
Yep.
I'm like, God, what a spectrum to think of an actor.
He is awesome.
But he is. He's what I'll call one of those guys.
He's a great character actor.
Yeah, those character actors. I have a lot of respect for them. I listened to a different interview with another character actor. I can't remember his name. He played, he was in the Zodiac and he played Drew Carey's brother on the Drew Carey show, whatever his name is. But he said with character actors, you know, when they show up on screen, you do one of those things where you instantly just kind of sink into your seat and go, I'm in good hands. And I think Joe's one of those. I think he's one of those guys where you see him and you're like, okay, I got a guy that's going to take control for a while and make sure things go smooth. And yeah, he chewed the scenery up. He knew what his job was.
Oh yeah.
I am the angry police chief. My job is to chew scenery. And he did it with aplomb. And he was probably my favorite part of the whole thing. Because he knew exactly what kind of movie he was in. I think that's another area where I think there's a little bit of struggle. He seemed to be the only one who goes, I know what kind of movie this is.
I can play this part. TV show with Tia Leone. Was it The Naked Truth?
That was it.
All right.
That was a pretty good show. It's a pretty good show. She was pretty good on that.
Okay. You know, from what I've heard about Madam Secretary, she's fantastic at that. Maybe she just needs to stick to the small screen. I don't know. Okay. One thing I also like before we're going to jump into the dislike is this is an action movie and it's an action comedy, but the action is not over the top, which, you know, you think Michael Bay and you think over the top, but this is Michael Bay's first movie. So he doesn't know what he can get away with. This movie is very subtle in its action. And I liked it for that. You know, it's believable action. Thoughts? I mean,
I don't think you're wrong.
In the second movie, there's a boat flying overhead. I mean,
that movie was a lot of steps up from this as far as crazy action.
And that was 8 years later. I mean, it's very, you know, you have car chases. There's ether in the back, which they were cutting heroin to resell when they stole the, you know, they're in a car chase. I mean, it was just very believable. Like, you know. They're like, there's ether back here. It was very believable action.
I think he's done that in some other, I think 13th Hour, which a lot of people didn't like about the Benghazi.
Right.
I really liked that. That's There's just a couple of his movies where I'm like, I really liked. I really liked 13th Hour. And I actually thought the action wasn't too crazy. But what he does, and he does do it in this, is just an excessive amount of slow motion, circular spinning camera shots where it's just like the action wasn't that crazy, but what is going on with the slow-mo? And the thing is, go watch 90s music videos. You're like, well, that's where he comes from, is that world. Which, so after I read that, I was like, it kind of makes more sense why his style is what it is. But I think you're right. The action was that way, but then he adds that little thing that I'm just like, it just feels like it takes it, makes it, I don't want to say corny. I don't know right. What the word is I'm looking for, but that's so agree, but slightly disagree.
It's, you know, and it's, yeah, it's for, I can appreciate it more because I've seen his other movies and I know how, I'm not going to say crazy, how over the top he gets. Yeah. One thing I want to mention before we get into the dislike, which I'm sure we're going to spend a lot of time talking about.
I feel like my likes were a lot of me talking about things I didn't like.
That's okay. we've already touched on it, so I'm just going to touch on it again. It's just the improvisation of these guys. You know, this movie could have really fallen flat. I think these two carried it. Of course, Smith and Lawrence, just by playing off each other. I mean, there's that scene where it's after the car chase, after Club Hell, and they're in and they just want to get some shampoo and they're fighting. And the guy thinks in the back, or the store clerk, he thinks that he's going to get robbed. So he pulls a gun on them and they're sitting there arguing. And it's just so believable, you know, and at the very end, they asked for a pack of Bubblicious and a thing of Skittles. And I was like, man, these guys rock at just going off the cuff. I doubt that was written down, Bubblicious and Skittles, but they just ad-libbed it and it worked. So kudos for the improv.
That scene was really good.
Yeah.
That scene was really good. And just a quick note too about the 90s music videos. He did Meatloaf's I'd Do Anything for Love, so that's pretty rad. I like that thing he filmed.
You mean that 9-minute movie?
like two things later, he did Bad Boys, so.
Right. So. Okay, so we've talked about the likes. I've only got one dislike, so I'm going to let Jay take this over. Let's talk about what you don't like about this.
Michael Bay.
That was going to be my one thing.
I think although the script was weak, I think with a stronger director, this could have been a phenomenal movie. I think some of his tendencies get in his own way. And for some people, man, they like that a lot. I'm just not one of them. I am not one who's opposed to like corn, you know, popcorn, over the top, ridiculous action movies. And I can't honestly tell you what makes one really, really good to me and what makes one really, really bad to me. But this one's really, really bad to me. It's missing something. But I think that about a lot of his movies. It's just too many of those panoramic spinning shots, slow motion.
You know, I agree. I think that's what killed the ending, because that's exactly the shot that I see. You know, it was panoramic. It was, yeah. Sorry to cut you off.
No, no, you're fine. I think the script, like I said, if they could have had, and you mentioned one of the guys that wrote Live Free or Die Hard. I don't know what a lot of people think. I actually love that one. And that one is, you know, Die Hard's the classic. Anything that followed is kind of a ridiculous, cheesy action movie. I love Live Free or Die Hard.
Richard.
I loved it. And I don't know what made that one work for me and this one not work for me. This one just doesn't have the thing. So the script was rough to me. I don't think I like Tia Leone. Maybe she was just really good and that's how she wanted the character to be. I don't know.
Is she the Kristen Stewart of the 90s?
I don't know. I just, I think it was nice that they kind of flipped the script on what made the buddy cop duo. That was kind of refreshing. It's just been done so much better so many times that it's hard for me to get behind this one. Like, you know, I mentioned 48 Hours. I haven't seen Midnight Run. You mentioned that as one of the writers. I just purchased it. I haven't watched it yet. That's another one. Rush Hour. Like, those are just so much stronger. A Lethal Weapon, like probably the king daddy of the buddy cop movies. They're just so much stronger to me. And I think with a better director, this one could be up there for me. It just didn't hit the mark.
Okay. So I'm gonna pose a question to you and I'll say my dislikes, but who in the 90s to make this movie better, what director would you pick?
Oh.
Yeah. You ponder that. Yeah. But I agree with you 100% when it comes to Michael Bay. It's almost like a double-edged sword because this is his first movie. So he's not like overdoing the Michael Bay-ness, like the things that we constantly see, you know, the tint, the strong colors. It's very subtle. You know, we don't get a whole lot of the turning panoramic shots. We don't get a whole lot of the slow motion. We do. But it's not full Michael Bay yet, which is almost a little bit satisfying. And the fact that he can go, listen, Will Smith, Martin Lawrence, we know the script sucks. Like, he knew it. Like, he was like, this script sucks. I want you guys to improvise. To me, as a beginning director, to have that much faith in your stars, kudos to him. Thank God he did that. You know, it really showed his prowess as a director. Then I think he went into the extravagance. But two key scenes that I think of that were ruined by Michael Bay-ness were when Teresa died. Was her name Teresa? The call girl that Julie's friends with?
The informant. I don't know.
That was done by a slow motion. And then you see her like arching her back and screaming in slow motion. And it's like, ah! And I was like, dude, just, she got murdered. I mean, she can scream. Just don't draw it out. Don't go slow motion. She was brutally murdered. You're taking away from the movie. And then, of course, the end. You know, Will Smith is going to let the bad guy live. And then there's, you know, he's pulling a gun. So it's, you know, a lot of quick takes as he's shooting. It's slow motion as Julie's turning around. It's a panorama view. I'm like, just show Will Smith blast this dude. That's what we came to see. He's our hero. Let him win. You know, don't try to cut it to make it seem like it's more action-y. It takes away from the film. Stop it. And then, of course, he doesn't, and he goes on to make the rest of his movies like that. So, you know, weak story, Michael Bay kind of doing Michael Bay things. Like, I just think of another scene when Julie is getting away after the murder of her friend who is Mike's informant. Mm-hmm. You know, she's getting away, and she goes up to the roof, and there's this pool, like, four stories down, and yet you can see the light reflecting, you know, cool colors. You know, why do you need that? It would never look like that from 10, you know, four stories up. It wouldn't reflect like that, but Michael Bay wanted to make it pretty, so he did it like that. It's just dude, just tell a story. So yeah, that's my beef.
There's your beef. I'll tell you the name I'm gonna throw out there, and it's cheating because they've done some
asked you
buddy cop movies, but Brett Ratner.
Okay. From Rush Hour?
From Rush Hour.
Okay.
Because those movies work really well because the dynamic between Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker, and it seems like there's, with Chris Tucker, I think you get a lot of off the cuff, you know, stuff, except I think he does action well. I think he films action well, but he doesn't get caught up in the flamboyance that Michael Bay does.
Okay.
But maybe that's cheating because I know he's done. I'll be honest, it's a struggle to think of action directors that stand out from the 90s. I don't.
I'm gonna blow your mind because I was just thinking about this. Why not bring back Richard Donner.
Yeah, Lethal Weapon.
He did Lethal Weapons. Bring him to do this. I mean, what? Lethal Weapon was released 87. Have him do this one, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah.
Richard Donner's huge, though, and he just makes gold.
He does. Superman.
Freaking, yeah, Superman and what? Goonies. And
yep. All right. Well, let's keep our conversation going. I think we're having a great talk. Let's talk sequels. So Bad Boys goes on to make two other films, a trifecta of a trilogy. You have Bad Boys 2 coming out in 2000 and what was it? 3, and then Bad Boys for Life, of course, just released in 2020. But just real quick, looking at the box office, combined box office, I'm sorry, production. So what it cost to make all three movies, $239 million. These movies, all three of them, have made over $800 million. So clearly these are the big time stuff. Now, the second movie was made for $130 million. So you have $19 million at the start for the first movie. You bump it up to $130 million. So obviously, you know, it's going to be more crazy. Third movie was made for $90 million. Rotten Tomatoes, 43 for the first one, 23 for the second one. Bad Boys for Life, the latest, 77% on Rotten Tomatoes. Let's dive in. So, Bad Boys 2. Go, Jay.
All right. So, I had not seen that in the past because I wasn't a fan of the first one. So, why would I watch the second one? But we're going to do this. So, I'm all in. Even though I watched the first one, I was like, oy. But what I thought of the second one, I'll give you my first thoughts, my initial thoughts on Bad Boys 2 is from Hot Fuzz. them talking about the movie Bad Boys 2. I think there is some really fun and really good action scenes in it, in the second one. I think there's some really bad action scenes, and I think in this one you start to see he's so edit heavy in the action that this is the biggest complaint with all those Transformers movies, except for Bumblebee, because that one's awesome.
Yep.
The thing you get is I can't tell what's happening. So many cuts. You're just like, what am I looking at? But the thing is, I thought the car chase scene, the one where they're literally throwing cars at them, that was awesome. That was a great, great action piece. I like the beginning sequence, too, with the KKK. The KKK is in the
– They are.
But Michael Shannon was in it, and that one blew my mind because I was like, I don't know. I guess I thought he's been acting for forever, but I think this was an earlier role because he's just a bit player in it.
Yeah.
And now, you know, now he's Zod and what have you. So story wise, I don't even remember what the story was from the second one. I know there's some Jamaicans. There was a Ku Klux Klan. There's some Jamaicans. there was a weird standoff scene that stands out to me where they're on the opposite sides of a wall, but,
yep.
It didn't seem like a coherent movie. It just seemed like an action set piece to lead into the next action set piece instead of an action sequence to move the story forward. Uh-huh. And so while some of it was fun to watch, I also – it just started to get grating for me.
So for me, second movie is – it was entertaining. The action, like you said, it was very good. Definitely Michael Bay. I can remember the bad guy getting shot in the head at the very end, and it's all slow-mo, and of course he lands on a landmine. That's Michael Bay. Like, it's just, I'm going to kill him, and it's like he's making up for the villain in the first movie dying. You know, we have to get this extravagant death. It was entertaining, you know, not my favorite. But yeah, I mean, the action was there. The comedy was there. It was a little... I think they actually tried to run a story. I don't think it worked out too well, but there's still comedic moments.
I thought the comedy worked a lot a lot better.
Yeah.
Once again, the story was just so incoherent, it almost didn't matter.
But then again, you have Will Smith and Martin Lawrence to play or to praise for that, because they already have that chemistry and they just build on it. Like you said, with the KKK scene, Marcus, Martin Lawrence, is about to be shot, and Will Smith tries to save him, but he ends up shooting him in the butt. And Will Smith goes, "Oh man, you got shot in the butt." And he goes, "Yeah." He goes, "Who did that?" Will Smith goes, "Who did that?" And Martin Lawrence has the best line, "That who be you." I could not stop laughing. Anyway, so yeah, Bad Boys 2. It was okay. It's entertaining. You know, it is what it is. It's just Michael Bay showing off.
Yeah, now, you know, real quick note on Michael Bay, but maybe another director I'd throw in there for these movies, over the top action, Paul Verhoeven.
Okay. Starship Troopers.
That's a guy that does over the top action, but there's always a level of satire attached. And
yeah.
I think that's a guy who could have maybe. It's hit or miss with him with people, because I think he's a genius filmmaker and some people think he's a terrible filmmaker. But RoboCop, Starship Troopers, I think are just fabulous movies, because he's really good at satire and really good at shooting action set pieces. And he'd have been a cool director to put in there. Just popped into my head when we were talking over-the-top action.
All right, so Bad Boys for Life, the most recent movie, top grossing movie of 2020. I would even say, yeah, you know, just because of Oscar talk right now, it'd probably get a lot of technical awards with edit. I'm just kidding. Anyway, so here's a fun thing. Jay has not seen Bad Boy. He rented it from Redbox. He's got it in his hand. He wants me to convince him to watch this movie. So I'm about to lay it out for him. Okay. Without spoiling it. Okay. No Michael Bay, better acting, and there's a little bit of a backstory. So run with it as you will. It is actually it is very well done. You know, it's still an action movie. There's still great action pieces, still great shootouts, but it actually tells a story. I'll let you run with it.
Well, I like I said, I just want you to convince me. I said, I've rented it, and if you don't convince me, I'm not watching. It's just I pushed through the second one, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I want to watch it. So when we have our discussion, but I don't want to watch.
out of the three, this one probably has the most story. And don't take my word for it. Watch it.
I'll watch it tonight. How's the humor? Do they?
The humor is funny. The humor is there. I'm not going to go into it, but it is present. They make a reference. So Bad Boys 2 had Reggie taking Martin Lawrence's daughter out. Reggie makes an appearance again. So that's the only spoiler you're going to get.
I did read an interesting thing about Reggie from the second one.
Yeah.
That he was genuinely pretty nervous when they filmed that scene, because Martin Lawrence and Will Smith were apparently huge jerks to him prior to shooting the scene. Like, actually behind scenes, they were just really mean to him. And then when they shot the scene, they didn't tell him what they were going to do. And then they just pulled the gun on him. And he didn't know that was part of the scene. So a lot of his reaction was pretty genuine, because they were already treating him like dirt.
Yeah.
just to try and build that animosity up.
Which, and I did not do the research on the second one, so I don't know about the script, if they were getting carte blanche to, you know, improvise.
I think I was looking up what the story was. And I stumbled across that fact.
All right. Well, like we do here at Flashbacks, we always rank the movies when it comes time for movies and sequels, how they stack up. So before we talk about the impact that Bad Boys has, obviously you've only seen the first two, and I think you're going to say 2-1.
I don't know. That's a tough one. You go, and then I'll.
Okay. I'm going to say Bad Boys for Life is the number one. I mean, it's excellent. They did a really good job with it. Then I'm going to say 1 and 2, but by a very small margin, small, minuscule. But again, I am a fan of the, I'm a cult. I like the series. I take it for what it is. I know they're crappy movies,
But when you understand how they were made and the carte blanche that the actors were given, it's okay. And the fact that the first one is not too Michael Bay-y, I'm okay. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. I guess I'll put it at a tie. I'm fully expecting Bad Boys for Life to... They're equally on my list of things I won't watch again.
Until we talk about, you know, Bad Boys for Life, you know, 10 years from now.
Yeah. Gotta rewatch them to remember that I don't know what the story is about even after I watch them.
All right. So April 7th, 1995, you know, this movie just celebrated 25 years. Let's talk about the impact. What do you think the impact that Bad Boys has, you know, 25 years later?
I think as far as action goes, it got Will Smith, who for a good decade or so was probably the top grossing action star. I don't know what Martin Lawrence's, you know, what kind of money his movies brought in, but he pumped out a bunch of comedies. I think did fairly well. I know he had some that had multiple sequels.
Big Mama's House.
Yeah, I mean he's a name, you know, that pretty much everyone knows when you say it. So it really set those guys on a much higher trajectory than they had, but also Michael Bay. So I think it created stars and made them a lot bigger. I think what it did for movies, like I said, I think it just created the ultimate cliched action movie. But I also think to have a hugely popular buddy cop movie with just two black guys was a big deal at the time. And still today, you just don't see as much of it. I think especially with everything going on right now, we're starting to see more of that. But this is 25 years ago. And even then, you know, you just didn't see it as a big blockbuster movie. So I think that is its most important impact.
Yeah. And you know, you said it all, you know, you've got two guys that their careers on the big screen really took off because of this movie. Michael Bay is going to start making a name for himself after this with Transformers, Bad Boys 2, Pearl Harbor, you know, he just takes off. But I think you said it the best with buddy cops. You know, we had Lethal Weapon 1987, and then those sequels kind of came here and there. But Bad Boys kind of revitalized the buddy cop for the 90s, because then you'd go off and you'd have Rush Hour, and you know, you'd have other sequels. You know, you could argue about the sequels to Lethal Weapon, but Lethal Weapon 4 comes out, which is after it's after Bad Boys comes out, and it kind of revitalizes things. But yeah, I just think that it really brings back the buddy cops. And then you look even further, the 2000s and the 2010s, you know, you've got, Central Intelligence, you've got Ride Along. I mean, you've got Stuber, all these type of buddy cop movies really have a lot to thank for Bad Boys with the resurgence that it caused in the mid 90s. So, any thoughts on that?
No, I didn't even think about it. You're right. I mean, would we have Rush Hour without Bad Boys? That's an interesting thing I don't think I thought of. And I didn't even think about a lot of those movies you just alluded to. Yeah, I mean, I think they're all definitely, wow, that's some good insight, man, because those were not on my radar. That was, yeah, I think you're right.
You're welcome. but yeah, I mean, just think about it. I mean, you have Lethal Weapon, you know, 48 hours and another 48 hours. That was it for the 80s. You know, you have Beverly Hills Cop, but that's just one guy. Mm-hmm. But after Bad Boys, you see Bad Boys 2, you see Rush Hour, you see, you know, Ride Along 2, Stuber, you see Central Intelligence. I mean, isn't there one on Netflix that just came out? Coffee and Kareem?
Oh yeah, I haven't watched it. It's got oh man, I can't remember his name from The Office.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I'm gonna. So, I mean, just those. I mean, you can't rightly direct it back to Bad Boys, but I think Bad Boys kind of
resurged buddy cops because we were weak in late 80s, early 90s. And then just you have that resurgence, and as the movies go on, I mean, I think a lot of it goes back to 95.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the things that I had said with the movies you mentioned, it got away from that original kind of white guy, black guy. We're so different to, you mentioned two of them with, you know, people of color in the starring roles. I mean, it goes back to that. It's crazy that it took 1995 before that was like the dynamic. I guess I haven't seen a couple of those movies, so they weren't on my radar, but yeah.
All right. Well, is there anything else you want to add before we wrap up?
I don't want to watch the first two ever again, but there's a crowd and they should watch it, but it's not me.
Okay. So, before we wrap up, it looks like our July movie, we are going to, be going further back to not just 1995, but 1985, July 3rd, 1985, we were given a very fantastic movie that the Front Row has done a review for already, but we've been given permission to talk about the first movie in depth. We are going Back to the Future. Super excited. I think Scott is going to be joining us. Scott is the original host of Flashbacks, but he wants to come back and talk about this because it is a classic. We are going to take the deep dive and talk about the very first movie, the one that started all, Back to the Future. So look out for that in July. Jay, do you have anything else besides that coming up?
No, not that I'm aware of. One thing I just want to throw out is people should watch The Five Bloods on Netflix because it is rad.
Look out for that because I think Jay is going to kind of head that up and do a full disclosure. He wants to do a full disclosure. So we have The Five Bloods full disclosure review coming out. Fingers crossed. Hopefully. I have not watched it. I want to.
I watched it this weekend. It's cool. It's crazy. It's weird. It's
fantastic. You can always check us out on Twitter, and of course, you can check us out on NPR. We are NPR affiliated. You can go to NPR's website, check under Community Voices. We are there at the Front Row Network. You can go to our Facebook page, the Front Row Network, and give us suggestions, things you want to hear. Anything else you want to plug, Jay?
That's it.
All right. Well, thank you for taking a stroll down memory lane with us. I am Ryan Lutens, and with me is my trusty co-host,
Jay Hoffman.
And we will see you in the Front Row.
This episode is a production of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more information and to see the full slate of Front Row Network shows, you can visit frnpod.com or nprillinois.org. You can also find and follow us on social media by searching for the Front Row Network on Facebook and Instagram, and Front Row Reviews with a Z on Twitter.